Hello and welcome to the Primary PE Huddle podcast, brought to you by Aspire Active Education. I'm Dan Hayes and I'm going to take you through this episode with our special guest. Aspire Active Education is a passionate family who all believe that PE, sport and physical activity are essential for children to develop a love of healthy living and to end physical inactivity forever. We've proven that working in collaboration with school leadership teams, PE subject leaders, teachers and all PE practitioners positively impacts the sustainability of schools embedding a powerful physical curriculum and essentially helps more children be more active more often. Through this podcast series, we aim to discover the power behind PE, school sport and physical activity in primary schools, the impact this has on the whole school, the impact it has on pupils' holistic development and the secrets behind the successful implementation of a powerful physical curriculum. This is what makes up the Primary PE Huddle. We won't be alone through this journey. We are joined by PE subject leaders, school and academy senior leadership teams, and experts in the field of primary education, who share what physical activity means to them, how they use it as a tool to positively impact children and young people, and what they believe in the Primary PE Huddle. Our guests perform a deep dive on topics such as creating sustainable, high-quality PE, the benefits of physical activity, a top-down collaboration to embed a physically active ethos, and sharing of best practice from their own experiences to create an enthusiastic culture towards a healthy and active lifestyle. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review and subscribe wherever you get your pods. Thanks again for joining us for another episode of the Prime PE Huddle. This week, we are lucky to be joined by Ryan Ellis. We've put him on the different side of the microphone. You may know the name Ryan Ellis. He runs his own podcast series. I've lost count of how many episodes, but I'm sure it's over 200. Ryan will probably correct me soon, but I'm going to let him introduce himself. He can tell you a little bit more about his own podcast series, what he normally discusses, but also his background and hopefully what he's going to share with us today. And we'll get plenty of gems from Ryan and his experience. So welcome, Ryan. Do you just want to say hello to our listeners and just give a bit of a background to yourself, please?
Yeah, cheers. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. As has just been mentioned, yeah, it is Ryan Ellis, and it is fantastic to be on this side of the microphone for a change. As has just been alluded to there, the host of the PE Umbrella podcast, and you are right, it is now over 200 episodes. I think as we're recording this, we're about 216 or so, give or take. So that was born in 2015, so a few years in that venture now. But my background is essentially a primary teacher, qualified primary teacher with a burning passion for PE, into being the PE lead in a particular primary school and then leading into PE consultancy work. And now, as most people know me, as the PE umbrella guy, which is, again, delivering consultancy and working alongside schools, universities and skits to develop their delivery and understanding of primary school PE.
Brilliant. So a lot of background, a lot of knowledge for us to pick at in this episode. So that's great to hear. How do you feel about being called the PE umbrella guy?
I don't mind, to be honest with you. Whatever resonates with people, I'm absolutely fine with. If they don't remember my name as being Ryan or Ryan Ellis, I'll take the PE umbrella guy all day long.
Fair enough. As long as they know something to call your name when you're at a conference.
Exactly.
Speaking of conferences, actually, before I delve into things, I remember the first conference was a Worcester-based conference that I saw you at, sorry. And you delivered a keynote there, and that was with Mark Kings and his team down in Worcester, which was a great venue. You mentioned you consult and you support schools. Just can you give a really, really brief overview in the sense of at conferences and different things when you consult schools, what is it in particular you're normally supporting them with and sharing?
Well, it varies, and actually we try and construct something that's bespoke to whatever that school requires or needs. I think it's fair to say all schools have different starting points of what they might require. So for them, that might be a case of actually somebody's new to the PE lead role within that school and they need some support in getting to grips with what that job is and what that role is. So that might be working alongside me for a half day or a day. We might be doing a learning walk, a subject review. We might be auditing various things across the school and just making sure the PE lead is in the right place, right frame of mind to know where to go taking the subject forwards. Or it might look like staff training sessions within a school. Staff maybe want to develop their learning around short-term or long-term planning, or they want tips for delivering outstanding primary PE lessons. So I'll go in and deliver some work on things that we might look for, which would constitute or contribute towards an outstanding lesson. So there's a broad range of things. And again, I try and tailor that to what will best fit the school and their need at that particular time.
Brilliant. So all that knowledge we will delve into through this episode. But as I always like to do, I always like to take it back to the start. And something I always like to ask all my guests, where relevant, I'll tweak it, but the first thing I normally hone in on is, could you name one thing that you'd wish you'd known before becoming a teacher in relation to primary PE? If, you know, before you, when you were a teacher going for your first PE lesson, what do you wish someone said, Ryan, before you go in that room, there's something you should know. What do you wish that was?
Well, actually, it's nothing with regards to that particular lesson, that one lesson, but something I wish somebody told me very early on was that you don't have to teach something brand new every single week. And I've spoken about this before. I often felt like I was almost crippled to the point of having to come up with a brand new warm-up, something fun, something quirky or different that the children are going to want to enjoy every single week. And you can overthink things and take things too far. And I wish somebody told me that and would just said, look, Ryan, take a step back, observe what it is you're actually teaching. And if you've got to repeat that and dive in to get, you know, draw out more learning from that, then do so. And I think the sort of analogy I've sort of taken on board since is that rather than going a mile wide and an inch deep, you want to be going an inch wide and a mile deep.
So is that something that you see often when you're supporting schools, is that mindset of, I just can't think of these new ideas? And do you come across a lot of teachers with that, with that same mindset?
Yeah, you do. I mean, you see it on social media as well, don't you, sometimes with, oh, has anyone got a game for this? Anyone got an activity for this? Can you think of an idea for that? And sometimes it's, well, stick with the ideas you've got and how can we deliver that? And I often talk about looking at it through a different lens. So what avenue haven't we explored yet through that activity? It might have an element or aspects of physical skill development, but as I talk about with a PE umbrella, or if we look, and the four umbrellas, or if we talk about me in PE or head, heart, hands, however you look at it, what other learning can you draw out through that activity that you've not yet explored? And that learning might be social-based, it could be cognitive, it could just be to do with the emotional aspects that are drawn out often in activities. So, yeah, I it's something I certainly see, and when I speak with teachers or trainees about that and say, well, let's look through this different lens, they often have that almost light bulb moment, or they just wanted somebody to reassure them that it's actually okay to go back and revisit. And it just gives them confidence when I say that to them.
Yeah, it's, again, supporting teachers in schools, it is that common thing, as you mentioned. The two common things that I came across were, for example, this half term we're doing this, I must stick to this regimented plan. But the flip side of that is, actually, I must stick to a regimented plan, but also be quirky at the same time. And I think that's where, from my experience, it's caused confusion for teachers that haven't had the opportunity to develop their skill set in PE. What's your experience with working with a school to develop, you know, their short, medium and long term plans, specifically focused on, let's take half a term. They've got a unit of work for half a term. What's the norm in a school, and what do you try and then actually change them to do instead?
Well, first I'll look at the planning they may have and see where they're, what angle they're coming at it from, because I'm always keen to see what schemes or what shiny object they've jumped on for that year and to see what it is they're interested in doing. And let's look at what that start point is. I'll have them talk me through what their intentions are. But then very quickly try and reassure them and make them aware that that plan should be just that, just a plan, just a guide, and it is flexible. It can move, it can change shape, just like any scheme or plan bought in. It wasn't designed for their school, for their pupils, for their context, for their environment, or for whatever equipment they've got in mind. So let's say that as a starting point, and then let's not get too caught up in that plan. So just because it's laid out in the traditional, this is week one, this is week six, we don't have to go at that pace, and it might not go at that order. It might get to week three and we might still be doing some things that were written down in week one or two. So I then start them to get to look at PE more cyclical almost a reflective journey as they're learning, repeating, consolidating, progressing. And we'll start to look at the skills that underpin, and this is not just physical, but wider as well, in that unit of work they want to deliver, and look at different learning intentions that we can draw out from that, some of which might be physical, some of which might be targeted towards well-being. And that's sort of the starting point that I would look at a half-term's plan with a school, is I'd get them to reflect on where they're at, and then to try and get them to see it from more of a cyclical approach as opposed to very linear A to B.
Brilliant. I mean, I said at the start that we'll be getting a lot of gems from you, and I think there's one straight away. That's absolutely fantastic. Completely changing the approach, and what you said a couple of minutes ago about changing the lens on the lessons. I think this is the mindset switch more than, you know, people always looking for that magic pill of how do I deliver PE, when it's a case of actually let's take what you've got, like you said there. Let's take what you've got and let's look at everything in a different way. Let's change what you already know. You know, talking about qualified teachers who know how to educate children. That's not their downfall. That's you know, that's their strength. And it's just a case of applying it to PE, and you know, they do it across all the different subject areas. Just to change the conversation slightly, I want to get your thoughts and opinions on the importance of PE in the grand scheme of education. You know, we're not just looking at the PE and PE curriculum and managing the subject now, but from your background and whole career, because you came from teaching and, you know, your passion for PE is clear, what importance do you put on PE in the grand scheme of education? And was there a moment that triggered that importance for you?
Well, obviously, my background and my passion and the fact that I'd gone down the avenue of creating a podcast and just chatting about the subject shows that I value it highly. And I put enormous importance on physical education, not just from a selfish perspective, but because I enjoy it. But since having my own kids as well, seeing how PE, and actually if we look broader at physical activity, how that impacts positively on them. And we simply have to acknowledge that for some children, physical education, and to that end, any other physical activity initiatives that are available at school might be their only opportunity to be active in a structured environment. That might be the only chance they've got, or maybe even had. So in a sense, we only have that one chance to make a positive impression and allow them to see how it can positively impact their lives in a number of different ways, even if that doesn't send them down the route of playing competitive sport. But what other skills they will learn and be nurtured in that environment, if you like, that can lend itself to other areas and passions that they have.
Yeah.
I think for me, I can't pinpoint any moment or trigger for where I've seen that importance, other than I feel like I've lived it, and reflecting back on some of my experience has been, and forgive this terminology, a sporty child. I look back now and think how I benefited in certain situations simply from the fact that I was quite competent in physical activity and sports in that realm. So what I mean by that is I've had conversations really recently with a parent of one of my son's friends, and I remember being very aware that being competent in physical activity and in sports at a young age, it helped me out in a lot of situations, even social situations. Now, I was a reasonably smart kid. I enjoyed my classroom and academic lessons, but the fact that I was able to compete on a physical domain in sport and so forth, it actually helped me out in terms of if there was any time or peer pressure from, I don't know, let's say bullies. I can think to significant times in high school. I can think back to my life. I can pinpoint one moment now in my head, actually, as we're talking, reflecting, where, you know, I was a small kid. I'm still very small and slender now. And I remember a couple of, probably a group of boys started taking the chance, as they do in high school, try and push you around, picking on you, whatever that looks like. And I remember another boy who sort of in that friendship group sort of stopping him and saying, oh no, don't mess with Ryan, he's sound, he's all right. And at the time I remember thinking, oh, I wonder why that is, you know, but he played on the school football team with me, the boy who said that. And it's almost like, because I had some form of competence in the physical domain, it helped me in social situations and allowed me to just get by in school. And looking back, I can see how, and this is really, you know, I wish I could go back and change that, but seeing how some other children didn't have that and were possibly picked on for, maybe that's the reason, but it isn't. It's something I've reflected on an awful lot recently, thinking if that was why, but it's definitely got me out of some sticky situations purely based on the fact that I was competent in sort of a physical activity and sporting arena. So that's another reason why I think, you know, it can bring together those social skills. It can get you mixing with different kinds of children and pupils and those that you wouldn't normally work with. So that's why I'm a huge advocate to just opening eyes to as many opportunities for children as they can and mixing with as many other pupils as they can as well.
Yeah, and that resonates with me as well, if I'm completely honest, in the sense of, you know, you have your group of friends through school that, you know, they drop and change a little bit, but pretty much you know you have your core, you have the group that you're normally identified as being with. But through school, I was quite lucky to be on, you know, some of the school teams, and like you said, mixed with other children in my school, in my year group, that I wouldn't normally, you know, hang around with or meet outside of school or anything like that. So it was a different social groups. And I mean, I went to university and did a sports coaching degree, not teaching. Looking back at what I took from that degree, it wasn't the subject knowledge. It was, as you said, it was everything that I'd learned from all those sporting situations, and not the elitism side of things, again, as you said, but the being able to interact with people more confidently, more competently, has definitely benefited me in a lot of different ways. And I've got my little boy as well. He's just turned 4 recently, and he's at preschool at the moment. And I've just started looking around primary schools, and you can imagine the subject that's at the forefront of my mind, and asking them about their curriculum, but not just the curriculum, but how they go about engaging them in physical activity, and what their focus is. And so far, all the answers have been fantastic, which is great. But we've talked about PE in sport, but it's also the physical activity side of things, of just, you know, getting them into a different learning environment.
Just to caveat that as well from what I just said there, I'm not by any stretch saying that if your child, if you are listening, or any other pupil, if you are physically active and competent, it will help you out. But in my context and reflecting on my upbringing, it was certainly something which I can hand on heart say it helped me in a number of situations. And I'm just same as yourself there with my son. I've picked a school based on predominantly its learning environment and the space it had. And I know that they've got a primary PE specialist full-time teacher who just teaches the PE, which also sold it to me that little bit more. But I take my son and daughter to all kinds of extracurricular clubs around the town I live in. I'm very fortunate to live in Harrogate. There's a lot on offer. And I spend a lot of money on them. And some people will say, oh, you're mad, Ryan, you're crazy, you spend so much on them. But I choose to spend my money that way. Some people might choose to spend it going on a night out, on a fancy meal, on bottles of wine or some beer or cigarettes. I spend my money on my kids because I see the value that they're getting from it. And it's life skills value. It's if I go and I take for the interview I did on my podcast from Richard Shorter, you go to a parents' evening and you get the patter about, well, here's where they are with their reading and this is where they are working towards or working beyond and so forth. And sometimes I don't care about that. I'd rather know, what are the friendship groups like? Do they get on with them? Are they a problem solver? Can they cooperate? Are they able to compromise? All these other skills, which I know will put them in better stead later on in life. That's what I care about. And that's the stuff that they're learning in a lot of these extracurricular sports clubs, if you want to call it that, that I take them to.
Yeah, and so with that emphasis for your children, then you mentioned parents' evening as well, and hearing back from the teachers there. From your experience within schools and obviously supporting schools, and there's obviously the passion for yourself there of the focus for your own children. What importance do you place on engagement in school after school clubs and tracking participation of those engagement and tracking physical activity levels and all this tracking that schools are trying to do, and that, you know, that the sports premium is asking for? There's data of engagement and percentages and so on. What's your thoughts on that side of things?
I can't say the track the activity at my my son's school. And personally, it's never something I've done massively in depth. I think you get pupil voice. I used to pass out pupil voice questionnaires to children in the school I worked at. I'd sometimes sit down with focus groups and ask them, build relationships, get to know the children. I didn't always write the data down. I'm not a massive fan of collecting data. It almost reminds me to an extent of when you still see the bleep test happening and you always question what's the purpose. And I can see in some ways how it might incentivize children to be physically active. But I remember back to being a class teacher, the ways that I tracked how physically active they were, whether it's in school clubs or after school extracurricular stuff, is just by talking to them. I knew that there was a kid boy in my class who went to karate lessons, and I'd ask him, oh, did you go to karate last night, Dan? And you know what I mean? And we'd have that conversation, or I'd speak to another girl in my class and say, oh, Patricia, did you have your horse riding on Saturday? Oh, brilliant. How did you get on? So it was almost just like knowing them at the right level and what they did. Of course, in school clubs, we would often track in terms of attendance, and it was nothing more elaborate than simple Excel spreadsheets to see who were attending and actually which proportion of our pupil premium children are attending and what is the split between boys and girls and so forth. Because we want to reduce inequalities, which maybe are apparent and maybe appear. But that's to the extent we put it in. And I know from now, of course, there's other initiatives and so forth. So things like the Moki bands, which, you know, really cool. And if I'd have started teaching when I did 10 years ago and they were about, I would have undoubtedly tried to incorporate them and use them if it makes something a little bit easier and gives you the quality data you're after. But I guess when you're measuring anything or anything that you do, you've got to question why you're doing it. And if you've got a good reason why behind you need that information, then by all means, go ahead. Otherwise, maybe it's not worth the hassle.
Yeah, it's making sure it's not just a tick box, making sure it's not just trying to implement something because, you know, you've heard other people implementing it and it feels like the right thing or seems like the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So taking that a little bit further with regards to how you went about your own way of speaking to the children and having those links, that relationship. And we've already spoken about how it impacts education on the grand scheme and children's development and what they can take in further life. So we're trying to place that importance into, say, a new school you're supporting. You've never met them before, only to organise yourself going in to consult and support them. How would you go about working with that school to ensure that PE, sport and physical activity, actually does become the beating heart of that school? And why would you recommend that schools take this approach?
Well, that and what I will say before I go into any of this is it's a long, old process. And this is not something you can do as a quick fix within a week, a month, even a year. And a lot of the schools whose heads I've spoken to and are in a position where I could now honestly say PE, physical activity, is a golden thread in your school. It's been almost a decade of journey, of incremental small gains each month, each year to get to where they're at. But one thing which stands out above all else in all of those schools, which I think is the first step if you're wanting to set the wheels in motion, is that they have firm backing and belief from the head teacher. It's top down. The person in charge who calls the shots in that setting has to be behind it. SLT. If they're not, then in my opinion, it isn't going to filter down and work, and it will just be a flash in the pan. It might be a fad. It might make a difference for a short period of time, but then it disappears. So it has to be almost stitched into the very fabric of what that school's about. So the first port of call is, how are we getting this information in policy? Or do we have policies in our school with regards to physical education, with regards to physical activity? Are these policies visible to all members of staff and governors and parents? Are they available on websites? Is it what the school's living and breathing? Because if it's not, it's hard to make that change. Things become nice to do if it's not in policy. It's nice to do that, but it's easy to leave it out. But it has to become a need to do. And I had a chat recently with a PE lead, and here's a good example of this. And I was going over their PE premium spend. And one of the things in there was about they were doing brain breaks to break up lessons in the day. And I thought, oh, that sounds great. So I just thought I'd ask a little bit further on that, and says, that's fantastic. You've put that in there. I said, are all the members of staff doing it? And the response I got was, well, I'm doing it with my class. I said, well, that's very good that you are, but you've put it in your premium spend and insinuated everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
And then they couldn't give me a firm answer as if they were, oh, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. So that's what I mean by it's a nice to do. If it's in policy and it's in writing and that school's living and breathing it, and the head teacher's saying, no, you will be doing this, because as a school, we firmly believe in the impact that adding extra movement or reducing sedentary time is going to have on our pupils. So then it becomes a need to do. So I think that's the first port of call, is sort of top-down approach, having those discussions. And you'll get the head teachers and members of SLT and governors, and ultimately they want to know the why as well. It's, you know, what's in it for me? I think we all now know what the research is, but what's in it for me? What are they getting out of it? What is it the head teacher wants to hear? Well, they possibly and probably want to hear how physical activity or PE can help reduce gaps or address whole school priorities, which might be with regards to attainment or attendance or reading levels or whatever that looks like. And evidence suggests that physical activity and PE can go away to help him with that. So that's maybe what the head teacher wants to hear. But then as we filter down through school to the class teachers, they're maybe wanting to hear how it's going to improve concentration levels and so forth. So for me, it's starting at the top and then chiseling away.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I always bring out in all the episodes and challenge my guests on is incorporating that top-down approach. And you've given some great aspects of what needs to be put in place for that to happen. And you've just mentioned there about effectively selling you know, that the head teacher, SLT and governors on the benefits of it. Is for, say, a PE lead that's starting this process from scratch, they really want to get the head teacher, SLT and governors on board. You've mentioned there about showing the evidence, but you also mentioned that we all know this evidence out there, and quite rightly we do. And the head teachers know it's out there. And there are some fantastic head teachers. There are some fantastic P-focused governors. And I work with many schools where they've got this top-down approach. But for those that don't have it yet, and for those that maybe have spoken to the head teacher or whoever it might be, and they've said about the benefits, they've shown the benefits from other things that have happened, what advice would you give to that PE lead to show them practical evidence within the school? What could they do within their school to show impact and for the head teacher and people to see it visually?
I think you've got to lead by example. You've got to be the person. If you've got to be the advocate. Every opportunity that you get to advocate for physical education and physical activity, school sport, whatever that looks like, take that opportunity. If that's having a small conversation with the head teacher in assembly when a particular child's gone to get up an award for something they've done, and you drop in that was because of an extracurricular club, whether it's a chance meeting with another teacher in the playground, whatever opportunity you get to advocate for the benefits it's having. But I would also hazard a guess that a lot of PE leads are still, as I was, full-time class teachers. So, yeah. You know, set the example with your class. I've spoken on my podcast many times, and I'll share with you now as well, about how I started implementing physical activity in the morning before my lesson started. I noticed the children in my year five class a few years ago were coming in. We always had numeracy penciled in first in the morning, and they simply weren't ready to learn. They weren't focused. There was all manner of things kicking off before school for some of them. So I started putting table tennis Mondays in, workout Wednesdays. So actually when they got into school on the morning, I had table tennis tables set up in the hall, which was outside my classroom. And we'd have 10 minutes of them hitting a table tennis ball back and forth, or we'd just do some dancing, or we'd just do some exercise in the hall. Nothing groundbreaking, not reinventing the wheel. But I quickly found that once I then took my class back into the classroom, they were, after a period of time, in a better position to then crack on with their learning. And I did this consistently week upon week, trying to set that example. And then before you know it, the other teachers in the classrooms alongside me started to take note, and they were asking me, Ryan, are you using table tennis tables this morning? Do you mind if my class come in? And then they started to doing it. So I tried to be that flag bearer. And then when people start to get wind of what's going on, and you can showcase by what you do, the positive impact it's having, others will jump on board. So you almost, it becomes too difficult to notice, like they can't ignore it.
Yeah, and I suppose that there with, you know, use your initiative and just going for something, setting it up in the school, if it's not going to impact anyone else in the school to begin with, you know, negatively, then there's going to be no objections or barriers for you doing that. And then it's that, I suppose it's a bit of a waiting game and just showing that impact.
I mean, I did have that conversation with the head teacher before. I didn't just turn up one day and wheel these table tennis tables out. I probably had some funny looks, but I had this chat and conversation with the head and said, look, I'm thinking of doing this. Here's the reasons behind doing it. Can I give it a go for just a couple of weeks or more, see how it goes? If it falls flat on its face, I'll hold my hands up and we'll go back. But can I give it a go? And I got the green light and then away we went. So it's just having those conversations and explaining your decision making and what you're doing.
Brilliant. Now, so again, some great ideas there. And because you've just focused there on your time as a PE lead, all your experience as a PE lead, should I say. Just honing on that one, because something I always like to do is get my guests to dispel myths about the role of being PE lead. Were you frustrated by any common myths that were thrown your way throughout your career as a PE lead?
I don't recall ever being frustrated about myths of being a PE lead, but I suppose the myth which I sometimes still hear now, which I think people don't realise, is just the sheer workload it involves. The myth that it's just organising competitions. And that's all it was, which, it, quite frankly, that's a very small percentage of what being the PE lead is. It could be, and I've had this chat with many people myself before, it could be a full-time job for somebody, never mind the teaching the class bit. Because with the PE lead involving, yes, maybe organising competitions, maybe running after school clubs, maybe taking them to competitions, organising the curriculum, quality assuring and evaluating the curriculum, looking at the physical activity across school and other initiatives, which comes under your remit often as the PE lead as well.
Yeah.
And not to mention all the risk assessment forms and other things that come along with that before you can even do that. There's so much going on there, which I don't think I was aware of or prepared for before going into the role. So I do remember feeling really overwhelmed, thinking, how can I do this on top of teaching my class 5 days a week? It didn't seem feasible. And I get how that can become overwhelming.
Yeah, there's a lot behind managing the subject and the strategic aspect of the subject as well. And something that is a lot of academics are actually starting to push is dividing. You mentioned about physical activity coming under the role of PE subject leader, but dividing those roles up where you have a qualified teacher as the PE subject lead to manage the subject, but then you may have someone else who actually takes charge of physical activity in school sport. And that's something that we had people come across from the University of Wolverhampton, an academic named Pete. And at the last West Midlands PE and School Sport Conference before COVID, he gave one of the keynotes and he shared information on this as well. And he really pushed that actually it should be split the way I mentioned, with the PE lead being a qualified teacher to look at the subject, and someone else taking charge of the other aspects that are often thrown under the banner of being a PE lead. Is that something you'd suggest schools do, or have you come across schools that do that?
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more. It does always get thrown under that same umbrella. Apologies for the pun. And I think that is what some schools should do, and I know that is what some schools do as well, where I know some schools where the head teacher has taken on the responsibility of being the physical activity lead in school.
Brilliant.
And they've got a separate PE lead who takes care of the curriculum, the core curriculum, the how that is balanced and progresses through school. But the physical activity lead will then look at everything else surrounding that, whether that entails school sports too, but certainly in terms of what's happening before school, what's happening across the school day in terms of physical activity levels, in curriculum time, at lunch times, after school. And I think that's a much better way to divide it up, because otherwise the workload is un, it's not it's unsustainable for an individual, particularly if you've got other things in life that you like to enjoy, such as children of your own or hobbies. I really do think that's the way to it. But I also understand that some schools don't have the capacity to have a separate physical activity lead or a member of staff who can do that, in which case you have to look at other approaches and models. And is there a way things can be divided up amongst other staff more evenly? You know, I don't want to put a PE on a higher pedestal than other subjects, but I really do think in terms of, as it's not seen as a core subject, it's a foundation subject, the workload entailed is absolutely enormous.
Yeah, it's when we support schools with the PE health check, and we start going into depth with PE leads, and like we work with a lot of PEs that have got a lot of it in place, which is fantastic. It needs some tweaks and developments, but especially when it's a new PE lead who hasn't actually been trained in PE specifically, other than, you know, through their teacher training or their PGCE. And you start to see the realization as you start as I start going through the check with regards to actually how much is being put on their plate. And a lot of schools are fortunate enough to have someone that can lead on the subject of PE that isn't a classroom teacher, but we all know that the majority have the full responsibility of their own class, everything else that's going on, and the subject leadership. And then what you don't want to happen is that to be of a detrimental effect on the children. There may be slightly less extracurricular opportunities because the PE lead, from everything they're snowed under with, hasn't had the opportunity to create those opportunities, to create more teams, to make sure that actually everyone through school has the opportunity. And we know that quite a lot of the time, competitions are focused for upper key stage two. And schools struggle with key stage one competitions because, again, that's a whole new concept for people to get their teeth stuck into.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And actually, it almost doesn't surprise me in a way when you see schools and you think, what's their curriculum? And it's, oh, well, we use that scheme of work. That's it. Well, although I could sit here, and I do, and say, well, there needs to be more thought put into it than simply saying we're using that scheme because it hasn't been designed for you, for a start. Yes. But I actually understand why. Like, I'm empathetic towards that. I'm not here to criticize because I've been in their seat. I've worn their shoes and walked in them. When they've got so much to do, you know, with their day-to-day teaching and their maths and their English and whatever else is expected, which is often held as much higher priority, they'll go down the easier, quicker route. And if that means getting in a scheme that's got some objectives, it shows some progression, and throwing that at the staff, they'll be happy with that. So I see both sides of the argument, and I guess in a way it gives me quite a privileged position, which is why I enjoy what I do and working with staff, because I can openly sit there and say, where you're sat right now, I have walked in your shoes. I know exactly what you're feeling and going through. So I'm not just standing here proclaiming that this is the way you should do it with no understanding of the angle you're coming at it from. So I know how tough it can be. So it is something which I do empathize with a lot, knowing that they've got to juggle all of that and they've still got to focus on their English and maths planning because they're doing that 5 days a week. And that's what their schools... whole school outcomes or their targets might be geared towards is progressive mathematics, and that might be what the head teacher and SLT are banging in staff meetings. They're not too bothered about PE. That's never been mentioned in staff meeting. It's about English and it's about math. So as a teacher, that's kind of your core responsibility, even if you are the PE lead. I felt like my core responsibility was the day-to-day teaching of my class in the core subjects, which meant more time got drained away from the PE stuff.
You already mentioned the top-down approach, and we're going to talk about it some more, I'm sure. But we talk about head teachers, SLT, governors, and so on, but that focus on English and maths is obviously coming from those people, but they're focusing on that for a certain reason as well. And we talk about top-down. Is the top governors and head teachers, or actually is the top higher than that? And you know, what do you think has to change at the core of education to then help those people that lead in schools change their perceptions and focuses to not be as much?
Well, it's everything's just data, isn't it, and statistics. And while you've got school league tables and you're constantly getting compared to your results from the previous year, and here's where we were 3 years ago and now we're worse off, and people constantly trying to push you forward, people always get focused on the on the details and the figures rather than the grand scheme of things. And I think when I'm speaking from a school perspective top down, I mean, ultimately the person who calls the shots in the school is the head teacher.
Yeah.
So they are the person that needs to be convinced. If we're going to go beyond that and higher than that, we've got to look at people who are holding school to account, whether we're looking at Ofsted and what they're looking at, or whether we're looking at teacher training. Whatever has to change, I've already acknowledged and I'm at ease with the fact that it's going to be a generational change and we're not going to see something overnight. It's going to be 20 years down the line. And I've spoken a lot about this, where if we're getting it right in schools now, and some schools are, in terms of physical activity, PE and school sport coming under that, being a driver for all things in terms of not just attainment. Yes, we know that it can impact positively on attainment, which is why I would assume schools would be doing it more, especially if attainment's their driver and data. Yeah. Physical activities go in to support that. But then the well-being side of things and children being happier and therefore better learners and enjoying school, all of that stuff. If we get pupils coming through that system and schools using that approach now, and I'm talking about the 5, 6, 7 year olds in schools as we're speaking, hopefully some of those will go through the whole school system with those amazing experiences, and those small few who choose to become teachers will be able to draw upon that and continue that trend. But until that happens, we just seem to have this vicious cycle, almost just orbiting the same star, this gravity pulling us into just the same thing every few years, and we're putting the same and we get the same results out, and we had the same discussions. I've been having these same discussions and thoughts for 6 years, 7 years nearly on the podcast now. And while some things have changed in some schools, it's not changed in others.
Yeah. It is a long-term goal, isn't it? It's definitely long term. So, right. Let's give our listeners something now to, again, loads of gems are coming out in the conversation, but I want to give them something solid that they can think about and take away with them from your perspective. And we've spoken about everything that's that needs to happen with regards to managing the subject. So let's take it back to the very start. Let's take it back to the vision for PE, school sport and physical activity in the school. Now, as a PE subject leader, you know, you're in charge of creating that vision and making sure that vision is embedded, as you mentioned, the golden thread. So for you, what makes a good vision for PE, school sport, physical activity in a primary school setting?
A good vision for me is, I'm going to go back to almost a little snippet and quote I've used before, but it's what's within that vision is it's a need to do it. It's explicit. This is something we need to do as a school. It's not something which is just nice to do as a bolt-on. So whether that's a PE vision statement or a physical activity vision statement, which I think can be two separate things. I know most schools will often go down the PE route and have a PE vision statement, less so physical activity, but I think that's becoming more common now. But I think then most importantly, everyone needs to understand why, if they're going to be on board with that. I don't want to go off on a tangent too much, but if I think about Simon Sinek's Golden Circle and all of that, the power of why, if everyone understands why you're doing it and why that is your vision, what's in it for them, the buy-in will be greater and it'll be more explicit and more powerful. A former head teacher at a school close by in Leeds explicitly shared even with the pupils why they were incorporating more physical activity. So the pupils weren't just, oh, this is cool, we're getting to have a brain break and jog around. It was shared with the pupils, well, actually, by doing this, it's going to increase the blood flow around your body. It's going to make you focus better in your lessons. It's giving you opportunity to exercise and be healthier. So for me, a good vision is just that. It's something which is a need to do in school that everybody buys into, and everybody, all stakeholders, understands why it is there. It isn't just a box tick. It isn't just on the website because someone says it has to be on the website, but it's looked at, it's amended, and everyone lives and breathes it.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it's got to come back to that why. And as I mentioned about, as the PE subject lead, you are the one driving it, going back to yourself with the tennis table, table tennis tables before school as the children come in. It's got to be driven by that person to get the other people's buy-in. So Simon Sinek's given some great TED Talks, so that's definitely one takeaway for the listeners. Find Simon Sinek and listen to some of his TED Talks, especially about the why. So now that's core place for it to start. And so going from that go from that point, getting everyone on board. You know, let's picture in that situation, we've got the teachers on board, they see the benefits, the school sees the benefits. It's now a case of, right, as much as they see the benefits, they need to be supported in embedding it as well. So this is where things such as CPD for teachers come in, you know, the sustainable impact side of things. And there's so many different models and methods of CPD. You know, there's full inset days, there's twilight sessions, there's ongoing mentoring, there's courses, qualifications, conferences, so on and so forth, and, you know, accessing podcasts and everything else. But from your experience delivering CPD to teachers, what methods did you see and use that were probably the most impactful to ensure teachers had greater confidence and competence in delivering PE?
Well, it's just breaking down almost invisible barriers for them, because what all these teachers didn't understand, or sometimes didn't, is that, I think you alluded to this earlier, is good teaching is good teaching.
Yeah.
They can put together a lesson in the classroom. They can put together a great lesson in PE. And one misconception, which was often the barrier to that, which wasn't anything world-beating that I did, was simply almost raising their awareness of what the national curriculum actually entails. And when I told them that they don't actually have to teach sport, it was like I'd taken a 10-ton weight off of them, because they all had this assumption, because for whatever reason, their school's long-term plan may have been written sport-specific, and they're reading it and they're seeing hockey on there, they're seeing rugby on there, and their immediate response to me was always either, I don't know how to play hockey, or I've never done hockey in my life. They were just associating sport and PE as being the same thing and thinking that if they couldn't play it, they couldn't teach PE. So as soon as I said to them, well, here's the national curriculum, you don't actually have to teach any of these sports explicitly. There's lots of other learning and outcomes and skills that can be taught within this in a creative way. Yeah. All of a sudden, that smile on their face, that light bulb, it lit up. And then working alongside them to show them that, as you've mentioned there, whether that is inset days, whether it's over a number of weeks, whether when I was in a school, it was through a staff meeting and a twilight session that I hosted, showing different ways to approach things. And just building those positive relationships with the staff I'm working with, just like we would with the pupils, which helps with our teaching. Building relationships. What makes that particular teacher tick? What other hobbies have they got which we can relate to and draw upon, which we can associate with their teaching or physical education, that will give them that buzz, that will give them that spark and give them that idea? So, yeah, I've often found that first step for me for at least 80% of teachers who've had apprehensions about PE is just opening their eyes to the fact it isn't sport. And already you can see that they're more willing and excited to give it a go.
Yeah. And a couple of things there that definitely resonate. One of them being that psychological barrier to, and it might be a psychological barrier to certain sports, because in PE through primary, secondary school, you know, when we were going through school and before that, it was a case of, right, we're doing this sport. And if you didn't like that sport, or you had a traumatic experience, it might have been a hockey ball to the thigh on a very cold day. It might, whatever it might have been, it automatically puts a negative relationship in the mindset of, you know, whoever it is, yourself or the teacher. And so breaking it down to not having half term of netball, but having half term of invasion games. And actually my focus for this lesson is spatial awareness, and doing that in a fun way that also develops other skills without having to know that, you know, the high five rules for netball. It did very much open the mindset, and especially working with NQTs, when they would tell me how they feel at the start of working with them. And then you'd see it click after, you know, a few sessions when they start realizing, when I was doing this, literally the amount of times I've had this said is, I was doing this in the classroom, I didn't realize it would work in PE just because it's a different learning environment. And the mindset is definitely a big one.
You see them, you can almost see them drop their guard slowly over time when they realize that. And even if there has been negative experiences, or positive ones, whatever experiences. And I go back to when I had my chat with Julie Pearson about this and her analogy. I love it when she just said, whatever rucksack of memories and narratives you've got and you hold about physical education or physical activity that you bring into teaching, you need to be prepared to drop that rucksack at the door when you walk in and leave it behind, because that's got no bearing on what you're about to do when you're teaching in front of you. You can't let that influence you in a negative or positive way. Yes, if your PE was horrible and you were made to run laps. Yes, if your PE was you were playing hockey or netball all the time and you didn't enjoy it. Don't bring that narrative along with you. Drop the rucksack of that at the door and come in fresh. Teach the kids that are in front of you using the national curriculum outcomes in a creative way, just like you would do in the classroom with all the amazing ideas and imagination that teachers have. And off you go.
I like that. I really, really like that analogy. I'm going to magpie that one, Ryan.
Well, it's on behalf of Julie Pearson. I can't take credit for that. On the podcast I did with her, we were talking about this rucksack of narratives and perspectives we bring with us. And when we are teaching, we do need to be prepared to leave it at the door. So it's funny you mentioned that, because that was the one audio snippet I took from our interview, and it's a real belter.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be using that one. So thanks very much for sharing that, and thank you. Thank you secondhand to Julie as well. Great bit of insight to share there. So again, going on this hypothetical pathway, we've spoken about the vision. We've spoken about CPD and supporting teachers. And you know, we know that subject leaders don't get lots of time to actually go into their colleague sessions to support them. So when they do get that opportunity, when a PE subject leader does get that opportunity to go into their colleagues' PE lessons to, I hate to use the term observe, but you know what I mean. But what would you recommend as best practice for them to check how things are going, shall we say, for both? It could be internal, it could be external, because again, as a PE subject leader, if you've got external organizations coming in to support with whatever it might be, you know, the quality assurance needs to be there from on the school perspective as well.
Well, I take it back a step further, if I'm honest, and almost before I even go and observe or informally watch, however you want to spin it, with that teacher, I would have them fill out some kind of questionnaire or just do it over a chat with them beforehand to seek out and source out what their current feelings and thoughts are. So if they know that's coming up and you're going to watch them, you know, and just it's in a settled way, you've got a great relationship, it's very informal, it's not invasive, you're not sitting with a clipboard or checkboard, but if you can gauge beforehand how they're currently feeling about their PE delivery, what are they enjoying about it, what's worked well, what are they enjoying about the planning and scheme, what's been a problem, what are they finding difficult, it gives you a good perspective from which to come in with, because you're already armed with information of what things you might look out for, and then they'll feel supported that you're on their team looking out for those things as well, especially if they've mentioned a pain point, because you can then look for solutions alongside them. And when you're in the room, as I've just said, you don't stand there with a clipboard and with your legs crossed at the side, tapping your pen on it. And I'd get involved. I'd be involved in the lesson. I'd be acting as one of the children, taking part in the game, speaking to the children, and then having conversations with the member of staff on the side about, okay, so you've done this. That's brilliant. I like what I'm seeing. Why have you done that? Where are you going with it next? Maybe you're not sure. Why don't you ask me while I'm here? It's just an active development session while you're there in a real positive way, where you can both just get on as colleagues, but you're providing them with some actionable support and takeaways in something which doesn't feel pressurized, and where they feel more nervous about something they might already felt nervous about.
Fantastic. Thanks again for sharing that. So we've looked at a lot of things, throughout this episode. You know, we've started to hone in towards the end there about actually what are the steps for getting, you know, the powers that be on board, for implementing the vision, for supporting colleagues and moving on through that way. So there's some great gems there. Conscious of the time, so now what I'm going to do is put you on the spot, as I do everyone. And obviously you would have listened to other episodes, you know what's coming, but it's the five tips. It's the five tips that I always like to ask. And you've already mentioned about the top-down approach, which is fantastic. And I know that you're already honed in on this as well. So we've shared loads in the episode, but if you were to pinpoint five short and sharp tips for those individuals and teams who are influencing PE in their schools to support them in embedding that top-down, physically active ethos in their school, what would those five succinct points be?
That's a good question, and it's an interesting one. And I think I'll probably be, through this answer, almost summarizing some of the points that I've hit home already, just because I believe in them so much.
Yeah.
And I think they are invaluable. So these are no particular order. I'm not going to number them as being more important than the other.
Fair enough.
But these are five tips. And I think first one would be build relationships. relationships are everything. Everything we do is human interaction. And I think that should come at the forefront of everything that we do. And I always take the Starbucks quote and try and spin it into education. And I think I'll probably butcher this right now, but it's something along the lines of, we're not in the coffee business serving people. We're in the people business serving coffee. Nice. And I always try and spin that and put that into an education perspective, that we are still in the people business. And whether we're working with other staff, whether it's the pupils, whether it's governors, I think building positive relationships is vital. So that'd be my first tip. I think then looking deeper in terms of how we're going to influence PEs is always have a why, starting with why again. Mm. Why we're doing what we're doing. What is the purpose of this? Is it something we can all get behind? And acknowledge that the why for different people, for different stakeholders might be slightly different. So you might have to have those bespoke conversations throughout, which kind of leads me to that third tip is share with others what's in it for them. Or often that abbreviation is what's in it for me, isn't it? W-I-I-F.
Yeah.
What's in it for, but what's in it for them? What can they expect to get out of it? And make sure, leading on to another tip here, that it is written down and part of any policy. It's in writing. It can't be avoided. If you're living and breathing it, it has to be written down somewhere. So if you are looking at embedding something, don't just share it on a piece of paper that's printed off of a Word document and pin it in the staff room. That's not good enough. It has to be there. It has to be on the website. It has to be on the notice board at school. It has to be plastered everywhere that this is what your school is doing. And then going back to something I tried as a class teacher, but I know there's great examples of this as well already out there, is lead by example. Whether you are that class teacher or even expecting the head teachers, maybe there's head teachers listening to this doing the same. I saw recently a video on Twitter of the head teacher at Academy St. James in Bradford, Chris Tolson, teaching the PE lessons because their PE lead was off. I think Niall was off a string of days, and the head teacher was in there teaching the PE classes. That's absolutely fantastic. You know, the look on the pupils' faces, seeing the head teacher living and breathing and leading by example. And I understand time is precious. I understand head teachers' jobs are incredibly difficult and have been. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes at all. But if he's giving up that hour for that day, that couple of hours to go and teach some PE, you know, you can't say better than that in terms of leading from the front. So the rest of the staff are going to want to follow.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm going to have to trawl through Twitter to find that video now. I'm going to have to go searching for that one. I've lost count of the tips that you've shared, Ryan.
I don't think I actually numbered them and said them as a broke them down. I'm sure others will have shared tips in a much better way than I have, but I just wanted to really hit home the points that we've mainly discussed and how important they are, particularly since the conversation has been centered a lot around influencing and advocating for PESPA.
Yeah, and whether you shared four or five at the end there, I mean, you shared a whole host throughout the whole episode. So there's absolutely loads that our listeners can take away with them, which is fantastic. So I just want to say thank you so much again for joining us and sharing your knowledge from not only your podcast, your own very successful podcast, but your years of experience.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Brilliant. No, not a problem at all. For those that are listening, if you are looking for more support, more ideas, I mentioned the PE health check that we do that's completely free. There's the scorecard side of things. All of this is on the Aspire Ed website. As well, another opportunity coming up that's very soon, which is the West Midlands PE and School Sport Conference on the 12th of November. That's held in Birmingham. So if there are any other questions, if you do want to, you know, learn more, get some more knowledge, there's lots out there. Recommend listening to the PE Umbrella. Some great episodes on there, listening to it myself. And if you like Ryan's voice, then that's where to go to hear some more from Ryan. But no, really hope everyone's enjoyed this episode. Thank you again to Ryan. It's been fantastic. And I'm sure we will do this again sometime. I'm sure we will.
Awesome. I'd love to. I look forward to it. Thanks, everybody.
Brilliant. Join us next time for the Primary PE Huddle podcast. Remember to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.
You can connect with us on Twitter at Aspire Sports UK and find out more about us and the family at www.aspire-sports.co.uk and www.aspire-ed.co.uk.